Osho. Christianity, the deadliest poison, and then the antidote to all poison. Talks given at the Osho Commune International, Pune, India. Discourse number one.
Our beloved Master, on one occasion, Lucky Dan wrote down the Chinese character signifying Buddha and asked his disciple Dogo, "What is this letter?" Dogo replied, "It's the letter for Buddha." Lucky Dan commented, "You are a monk so full of chatter." Once reading this course, Lakshadan didn't light the candle as usual. A monk came and stood by his side. Lakshadan said, "I have a very special phrase. If a bull gives birth, I will tell it to you." The monk said, "The bull has already given birth long ago, and he just keeps not revealing it." Lakshadan asked for a light. When the candle was brought in, the monk retreated and disappeared into the assembly of monks. Later, Undan told Tozan about this, and Tozan said, "The monk knew the truth. He just didn't want to make obeisance to the master."
One of the sannyasins has asked him a question. The truth is one. Then why all the masters, all the awakened ones, it speaks in different ways? Sometimes it looks they are even contradictory. The truth is certainly one, but it has multidimensional reality. And every master hope to choose a certain dimension. You cannot speak all the dimensions together. Every master has his own style, his own way of speaking, his own way of conveying. The higher you rise in consciousness and awareness, the more you become unique. The more you become individual. But let me explain to you, individuality is not personality. Personality is given by the society to you. Individuality is your intrinsic nature. Personality is fake, a fraud. Individuality is your innermost Buddha, your innermost enlightenment, your innermost door to the divine. But every master is bound to be unique in his expression. They are all saying the same thing. They are all indicating towards the same moon, but their fingers are different. They are bound to be different. The finger of Buddha, or the finger of Lao Tzu, or the finger of Chuang Tzu, are bound to be different. If you pay too much attention to the finger, there is every possibility you will forget the purpose. The purpose was not the finger, the purpose was the moon. All the differences are in the fingers, in their expression. The experience of truth is one. But to bring it to expression, every master has to find his own device. That's why even enlightened people appear to you is speaking differently, even contradictorily. Because existence does not have one-dimensional sources. It is multidimensional. It is comprehensive of all contradictions. All contradictions melt into one cosmos. Now, you cannot express the whole cosmos in any statement. All philosophies fall short, and all languages appear impotent. All theologies only manage a very partial truth. And remember, a partial truth is not truth. You cannot cut truth into parts. It is one, and organically one, not mechanically one. You can put a car apart, and you can put those parts together again, but you cannot do the same with a living organism. You cannot put a man's parts apart and then put them together. You can do it, but the man will not be there. There will be only a cart in your hand. But it is one of the most difficult problems faced by all awakened ones. How to convey? They find devices, methods, meditations. They open doors so that you can look at the truth yourself. Of course, every master will have its own door. Existence has millions of approaches. And when a master reaches to the truth, he reaches by one path. And obviously he will talk about the path he has reached to the truth. Truth is one, but paths are many. And unless we understand it, there is going to be a constant conflict and misunderstanding. In the minds of the seeker, I am reminded of one of the greatest Urdu poets, Valu. 300 years have passed. But in 300 years, great poets have been born in the Urdu language. It is a very poetic language. I don't think there is any other language in the world which is so poetic. Contemporary languages are bound to be non-poetic. They have to be scientific, exact. Poetry is flexible. Poetry does not say directly, it only hints. This great poet Mirza Ghalib has a very beautiful statement. I would like to repeat first in his own language, then I will translate it. Hain duniya mein sukhanvar bahut achhe, log kehte hain Ghalib ka hai bayan aur hain duniya mein sukhanvar bahut achhe. In the world there are many great poets. But the way of Ghalib, people say so, is absolutely unique. Every master is unique. Just like an Everest is standing far high, touching to the star, alone, never compare to master. Comparison is not the right thing in the world of masters. Comparison is mind-oriented. It is intellectual. And the master's realization is beyond the mind. It is spiritual. In the world of spirit, in the world of godliness, there is no question of comparison. Everyone is unique. But surrender, dedicated to the same truth from different angles, it needs a tremendous capacity of understanding. And that understanding has not to be of the mind, it has to be of the meditation. Mind can understand everything that is outside you. All that is objective is available to the mind. Science and technology and philosophy and theology, all are mind-oriented. But that which is within you is behind the mind, beyond the mind. It opens itself in your meditation. When you start dropping your thoughts, relaxing deeper and deeper, then there is only left a witness, The body is far away and no more you. The mind is just an echo in the valley and is no more you. In the innermost core of your being, there is no thought, no cloud. A great silence. In that silence arises authentic understanding. In that silence you are closest to the divine. That silence is a way, a bridge, a path, a connection to the ultimate. Once you know the ultimate, the difficulty arises how to convey it. And a tremendous urge to convey it, because millions of people are living in darkness, in blindness, stumbling, finding no way out. Millions of people are born in the night and die in the night. There is no dawn in their life. When one comes to the dawn, when one realizes the sunrise, and his whole being becomes full of light and beauty and blessing, he wants to share. This desire to share comes autonomously. How to share that which is beyond the world? All masters have been struggling to find some way to communicate, to commune. That's why you find differences in their statements. Rather than thinking about their statements, it will be better to go within yourself and find the truth. Nobody can help you. The masters can only show the way. You have to walk. Nobody can come inside you. That is the dignity of man. A great privilege. Nobody can interfere in your inner life. You are alone there, the supreme most sovereign. But people have got into trouble because they have started imitating. You can imitate a Buddha. You can have the same clothes. You can walk the same way. You can eat the same kind of food. You can follow all moral principles, but you will be still an actor. You will not be a Buddha. It happens there were three monasteries deep in the mountains, all belonged to three different Christian sects. One day it happened by coincidence that the three abbots of the monastery had gone for a morning walk and they all met on the crossroads. They talked about matters concerning their monasteries and other problems. And finally, one of them said, I have to tell you that as far as scholarship is concerned, my monastery is far higher than your monastery. The second one said, that is true. As far as scholarship is concerned, your people are great scholars. But don't forget, as far as discipline is concerned, my monastery is far higher than yours. And also remember, scholarship is not going to help. It can make you knowledgeable, but it cannot make you wise. You have to walk the path of discipline. Then only you can become a wise man. The third was silent up to now. He laughed and he said, you both are right. But as far as humbleness is concerned, we are the top. Humbleness and the desire is to be at the top. You can be humble. You can force yourself to be humble. You can repress your ego. But that humbleness will not be true humbleness. It will be just inverted ego. It will be low-key ego. Once a man touched my feet, I told him there is no need. He said, it is not your concern. I am just the dust underneath your feet. To provoke that man, I said, that's right. Immediately he became angry. He said, you tell me that I am just the dust under your feet? I said, I have not said anything. You were saying it. I simply agreed. Humbleness or any other quality which makes you religious, if practiced from the outside, makes you an actor. If it arises from the inside, on your own experience of the intelligence of existence, then it has a different flavor, a different fragrance, the fragrance of the freshly opened rose. Then you are neither egoic nor humble. Because humbleness and ego both are two sides of the same phenomenon. You simply are. This being simply to be makes you enlightened, gives you new insight into matters, it happened in America they were celebrating some birth anniversary of Abraham Lincoln. And they searched all over America a man who would look like Abraham Lincoln, and they found it. A man was almost looking the same. So they had chosen that man, they trained him. Abraham Lincoln used to stutter a little. So that man had to be trained for stuttering. Abraham Lincoln was a little lame in one feet. So he started walking like a lame person. 1 year continuous training. For the coming year, they were going to celebrate the birthday the whole year, all over America. In 1 year, continuously practicing and practicing and practicing, and then the second year, going from one city to another city, from one part to another part, and playing the role of Abraham Lincoln, the man became so much obsessed with the idea that when he came home, he came as a lame man, stuttering. First the family thought that he is joking. The festival was over. They told him, now you don't have to do all this. He said, what do you mean? I am Abraham Lincoln. Those 2 years got into his head. They thought he will calm down. Those 2 years had been too heavy and hard. But he did not. He was calm and cool and absolutely certain that he is Abraham Lincoln. They took him to the psychiatrist. The psychiatrist tried in every possible way, but no success at all. But he was feeling very much harassed and tortured by everybody in his town, by his friends, by his family, and now the psychoanalysts, they started harassing him. Finally, the psychoanalyst he was visiting put him on the lie detector. If he was lying, the detector will show. Because of too much harassment, the man thought it is not worth. When standing on the lie detector, the psychoanalyst asked him, are you Abraham Lincoln? He said, no. And the lie detector said, he is lying. He is Abraham Lincoln. Acting can go so deep in your unconscious layers of the mind that it is beyond your consciousness. You have only a small, thin layer of consciousness. Compared to it, 9 times bigger is your unconscious. If something enters into your unconscious, you will start behaving like Jesus, you will start behaving like Muhammad, but it will be just acting and nothing else. And acting is not a transformation of your being. I'm against imposing any discipline on yourself from the outside, according to others. I'm in favor, in absolute favor, categorically, that your life should arise from your own inner strength, from your own awakening, the morality, the discipline will follow just like a shadow follows you. The world is living in tremendous misery because of your so-called moralists, Puritans, who have been imposing things from the outside. Those things enter into the unconscious and the man starts behaving in a certain manner, but he is a robot. Unless your potential that you have brought with you, which you have been carrying from eternity, unless that potential, that seed sprouts and starts gathering more and more foliage, and brings blossoms to your being, then morality is a small matter. You don't have to listen to Moses and his 10 commandments. You will find your own commandments. Unless you are in direct contact with the divineness of existence, all that you are doing is creating a persona, a personality, fake, fraud, hypocrisy. I have heard when God created the world, He went around with the 10 commandments. He asked the Babylonians, would you like to have 1 commandment? They said, what it is? Naturally, first you should inquire what is the commandment. God said, you should not commit adultery. Babylonians said, forget all about it. What shall we do then? In this meaningless life, adultery is the only game. Just get lost. God was very much angry, but what to do if they don't take? He went to Egyptians, he went to other races, but everybody asked, first tell us what is the commandment. And they all refused. They said, we don't want anybody else to say us what to do. We want to find from our own innermost spring what is right and what is wrong. And then he came across finally to Moses, who was struggling in the desert of Saudi Arabia for 40 years continuously, finding the holy land Israel almost 2/3 of the original group that he has taken from Egypt has died on the way. By the time he reached Israel, He was old, utterly tired, and there has grown a generation gap, because his old friends with whom he has come, almost all has died. New generation has come in. In fact, a third generation was growing up, and they don't have any respect for Moses. They don't know the fellow. Who is this man who goes on commanding, do this, don't do that? But it was not his fault. It was God who has met Moses, and not knowing the Jews exactly, he asked Moses, would you like to have one commandment? Very hesitantly, because he has been refused from everywhere. But Moses asked a totally different question. He did not ask, what is the commandment? He said, how much it costs? Just like a Jew. God said, it is free. Then Moses said, I will take 10. If it is free, why take 1? But any commandment taken from anybody, even from God, are not going to give you a revolution in your being. It will only create an excess, a pretender, a hypocrite, a repressed person, inhibited, feeling guilty on every account. Whatever he does goes against the commandment. But 10 commandments are nothing compared to Gautam Buddha. He has 33 million principles for every Buddhist monk to follow. You cannot even remember. 33 million? Every detailed gesture of your life is completely controlled from outside. I hate the very idea of being controlled from outside. I love the flowering of your being, and I am absolutely certain, because whenever your potential blossoms, there is no question of choice, what is right and what is wrong. You choose the right without choosing. It is a choiceless, only alternative. For a man of clarity, for a man of absolute perceptiveness, for a man full of light beyond the mind, life becomes a choiceless phenomenon. You simply do the right thing. It is not that you think that it is right, that's why I am doing it. With me, the definition of right and wrong, good and bad, sin and virtue absolutely changes. Whatever the enlightened person does is right. Whatever the enlightened person does not do is wrong. So I don't teach you any discipline, any morality. I simply teach you to be aware. And in your awareness, you cannot do anything wrong. You cannot harm anybody. You cannot violate anybody's freedom. You cannot interfere into anybody's territory. A great respect for life, reverence for life arises in you. And it has nothing to do with your religion. It has nothing to do with your belief systems. A man of awareness does not belong to any organized religion. Organized religion is against religiousness. Every organized religion kills the truth. The ancient story is a man found the truth. A little devil came running to the old devil and told him that, "What are you doing here?" He was smoking a cigarette. He said, "My son, cool down. What is the matter?" He said, "You are sitting here and one man has found the truth. Our whole business is at risk." The old devil said, "Sit down. Take another cigarette for you. My people have already reached there." He said, "But I am coming from there. I have not seen any devil." He said, "Devil are not needed. My people have reached there. They are the priests. They are the rabbis. They are the popes. They are the Sankracharyas. They are the imams. They have reached. They will organize the truth. And once the truth is organized, it is finished. They will surround the man and they will not allow the people to approach the man. They will interpret the man, and in their interpretation, the truth will be lost." The last commandment from the Pope has been, he has found a new sin. It is a great discovery. People have been sinning just old way routine. He should be counted as a great pioneer. The new sin is that you should not communicate with God directly. You should only communicate through the priest. As far as I can see, that's what devil was meaning. That when the priests are there, they are my people. They serve me. They talk about God. But talk about God, creating belief in people about God, does not help any transformation. The belief is not needed. What is needed is knowing. Belief simply hides your ignorance. It does not make any rebellion in your being. Once Sri Raman, one of the great seers of this age, was asked by a journalist coming from the West, that, "Do you believe in God?" Sri Raman said, "No." The man was shocked. He has heard that this man has realized God, and he says he does not believe in God. He repeated the question. He said, "Have you heard me rightly? I am asking, do you believe in God?" Raman said, I have heard it. Do you understand what I have said? I don't believe in God because I know there is no need of belief. I know the whole existence is divine. There is no personal God anywhere. Every part of this universe is divine. I know it. There is no question of believing. Beliefs are to distract people from discovering the beauty, the grandeur, the splendor, the divinity of existence. And this is what all the priests are doing all over the world of all the religions. Programming people into believing certain things. God, heaven, hell, right, wrong, what is virtue, what is sin. I would like you to know exactly the meaning of the word sin. It does not mean what the Christians say. It means forgetfulness. In its root, it means forgetfulness of your being. So there is only one sin, that means forgetfulness of your being. And there is only one virtue, that is remembering yourself. And the moment you remember yourself, this whole existence becomes a totally different place. A great love arises, a great compassion arises, not that you cultivate it, you simply found it, just as in a flower opening in the morning sun, the flower discovers its own fragrance for the first time. Amazed, a mystery was hidden inside him, a splendor. He dances in the wind, in the rain, in the sun. Just the sheer blissfulness of having such a beautiful fragrance. Remembering yourself, you don't have to be part of any organized religion. You have a direct communication with existence. No argument is needed to prove. You know it. Arguments needed only when you don't know it. Do you need any argument for the sun, for the moon, for the starry night? Do you need any argument for things that you know? You need argument for hell. You need argument and great theological systems to prove heaven. It is strange that all religions are concerned with hell, with heaven, with God. No religion seems to be concerned with you. They are all concerned with past, they are all concerned with future. No religion seems to be concerned with the present. All religions are life negative. they deny life. And to deny life is to deny God. That is the only denial. Whoever denies life and teaches renouncing life is an atheist. He is against the divinity of existence. Whoever teaches you to live life in its totality, with great affirmation, rejoicing, singing and dancing, then this very moment the whole existence becomes divine. In your dance it becomes divine. In your joy it becomes divine. In your blissfulness it becomes divine. In your ecstasy you reach to the highest peak of divineness. Unless you know your own divineness, you cannot know the divinity of existence. That is just the beginning. To know your divineness is the first step in knowing the divineness of the whole existence. This existence has never been created, because the whole argument is absolutely wrong. All religions think everything has to be created, otherwise somewhere it will come. But they don't think from where God comes. If God created the world, from where He is coming? Who created Him? And if God can be uncreated, then what is the point of bringing unnecessary hypotheses? This is a basic principle of all scientific research. Don't bring unnecessary hypotheses. Work out with the minimum hypothesis. If God is to be created by another bigger God, you will end into an absurdity. What logicians call regression infinitum. You will regress into infinity and you will not find the answer. The question will remain standing exactly where it was. Who created the last God? Existence is enough. Hence I teach you godliness but not God. God is the invention of the priest. God is a fiction to console you, to make you afraid, to make you guilty. All religions depend on your guilt, on your fear. But that is not authentic religiousness. Authentic religiousness will make you unafraid, fearless, not a slave, not a puppet in the hands of some unknown God, some fiction. According to my experience, if there is God, it is against man's freedom. If God has created you, why He created you? According to Christianity, God created the world only 4,000 years before Jesus. So it is only 6,000 years before God created the world. What He has been doing since eternity. And what was the cause that suddenly he decided to create this world? And if God creates the world in a whimsical way, without any reason and rhyme, for eternity he has been in a deep slumber, and suddenly he woke up 6,000 years before. It must have been January. First January. Certainly Monday, because he worked 6 days, and on Sunday he disappeared for eternal holiday. Since then he has not been known. One of my tailors, an old man, told me a very beautiful thing. I was going on a tour. I told him that exactly within 6 days you have to prepare my clothes. Saturday evening I will collect. And I am a perfectionist. So put aside all your work. He said, okay. Have you had a look at the world? I said, what do you mean? He said, God created this world. Do you see the mess? I can make your clothes in 6 days, but they will be all in mess. It is up to you to choose. I said, you are right. Looking at the world, in 3,000 years there have been 5,000 wars. What more mess you need? All the nations are driving themselves to become nuclear. This poor country has become nuclear. Half of the nation is starving. But the politicians are not interested in 500 million people which are going to die within 10 years. It will become a big cemetery, the whole country. Half of the people are going to die. One will die out of two. There will not be enough people to carry the corpses to the funeral pyres or to the graveyards. You will be surrounded by corpses. It will be impossible to live. Your whole country will be stinking of death. But your politicians are not concerned about it. They are concerned about making the country nuclear. They have already made it. It seems to be absolutely a mess. It is a proof that it has not been created. It is evolving accidentally. It is up to man, not up to God, to put it right. But man can put it right only if he puts himself right. It is very difficult to convince the unconscious masses. That the world is moving towards a global society by the end of this century, perhaps. The only planet in the world which has created people like Buddha and Jesus, people like Lao Tzu and Rinzai, will disappear. The whole existence, millions of stars and millions of galaxies, are absolutely without any life. This is a miracle, that this small earth, it is very small. You don't understand its smallness. The sun is 6,000 times bigger than this earth, and this sun is a mediocre star in the world. There are bigger suns, far bigger. This does not count much. This is a small galaxy. But this earth is our home. Unless we put ourselves right, we cannot put humanity right. We cannot put this earth in a way to live beautifully. There is no need of nations, there is no need of religions, there is no need of races. It is one earth, it is one world, it is one truth, it is one divinity. But one has first to search within oneself. I have heard about a man who became mad, but that was not bad. In madness, he started thinking that he is dead. Everybody tried to convince him that you are alive, you eat, you drink, you sleep, you go for a morning walk, and you say you are dead. He said, I know perfectly well I am dead. Who told you that dead people don't go for a morning walk? It was very strange of the fellow. He argued, who told you that dead people don't eat? Perhaps you are also dead. You simply have forgotten to remember when you died. I remember. He was taken to the psychiatrist. There is no other place. Although psychiatry has not been of any help to anybody. But what to do? Except psychiatry and psychoanalysis, there is nowhere to go, and they have not been of any help. Now even the greatest psychoanalysts are saying that psychoanalysis is on the path of dying, because people have not been helped by it at all. 15 years of psychoanalysis, 20 years of psychoanalysis, your whole bank account is shifted to the psychoanalyst, and you are the same. Perhaps more insane. The psychoanalyst said, don't be worried. I have treated many people like this. Sit down. The dead man sit down. The dead man said, "Do you think you are alive?" He said, "Here you have come for treatment, are to give me treatment." The madman said, "Just by the way I inquire whether you are still alive, these few people think they are alive, and I am saying the truth from my very bottom of the heart that I am a dead man." The psychoanalyst was a very clever, very experienced man. He took out a knife and cut the man's hand just slightly so the blood comes out. Before cutting the hand, he asked the man, "Have you ever heard, when you used to be alive, that dead men don't bleed?" He said, "That's true. I have heard it. While I used to be alive, a proverb that dead men don't bleed." Then he cut the dead man's hand and the blood came. He said, "Aha, now." The dead man said even loudly, "Aha." That means the proverb is wrong. Dead men do believe. This is a proof. Now, what to do with people? If you want to help them, it is not an easy job. It is one of the most difficult things to help somebody towards a spiritual exploration. To move someone towards his inner space. That's exactly my work here. My only concern is to make you aware of your innermost center, and then everything will follow on its own accord. The sutras, our beloved master, on one occasion, Yaku-san wrote down the Chinese character signifying Buddha and asked his disciple Dogo, "What is this letter?" Dogo replied, "It is the letter for Buddha." Perfectly sexual and right. But in the vision of a master, it is a totally different thing. Does Dogo think that the master does not know what the character signifies? His answer implies that the master is ignorant of the significance of the Chinese character. If he had understood, he would have remained silent. His silence would have been the right answer. He would have remained silent, showing to the master that you know it already. Why you are harassing me? But on the contrary, he said, "It is the letter for Buddha." He showed his knowledge. Before a master, you should show your heart. you should show your innocence, not your knowledge. All knowledge is rubbish. All knowledge is borrowed. Dogo missed the point. Yaku-san commented, "You are a monk so full of chatter." And he has only said one word. But the master is right. One word has come out, but the chattering mind, yakatiya, yakatiya, it goes on inside. From where this Buddha has come? From that yakatiya. Just he has pulled one word out. He is not a silent man. The master is disappointed. He hoped that Dogo will remain silent, knowing that the master knows. He is unnecessarily pulling my leg. Or if he wanted to answer him, he could have touched his feet. That would have showed that character shows you the Buddha. Gautam the Buddha is not the only Buddha in the world. There have been thousands of Buddhas around the world, in different parts of the world. They may not be known as Buddha, because Buddha simply means the awakened one. It is not the name of Gautam Buddha. His name was Gautam Siddhartha. Buddha is his awakening, his enlightenment, his knowing himself and the existence. Anybody who becomes awakened can be called a Buddha. It is nobody's monopoly. Because the word does not belong to Gautam Buddha. It is not his name. It is his quality that has happened to him. His awakening. Anybody awake, anywhere in the world, has the right to be called a Buddha. Yaku-san was an enlightened master. Thousands of disciples, hundreds became enlightened under his guidance. Just touching his feet would have been the right gesture of a man of understanding, that it signifies you. But there is no need to use the word, just touch the feet of the master. Or if you have courage enough, then slap the master. Then what do you mean? You know it, and still you want to harass me? In Zen, slapping the master is a very common routine. It is the only religion in which the master and the disciple are not inferior or superior. Sometimes the master hits the disciple, sometimes the disciple hits the master. A great master, Rinzai, called his most intimate disciple suddenly in the middle of the night. The disciple was meditating outside the master's house. He came in. The master said, "I have to call you. I love to hit you." "As I see, you are coming too close. By the morning you will be a Buddha, and I will not be able to hit you."
so this is the last time.
And he hit him.
And the disciple touched his feet in gratitude. Zen is a very special world. It has its own ways which are absolutely unknown outside this small stream of the Buddha. It is not an organized religion. It is pure religion, simple religion. Individual is far more important than the church. It was so loving of Rinzai to call his disciple. Slapping him was sheer love and joy that I have been enjoying slapping you for years. From tomorrow morning, I will not be able to slap you. On the contrary, if you want, you can slap me. And exactly the next day morning, the disciple came in and slapped the master. And the master laughed. And he touched the feet of the disciple. Just as in the night the disciple had touched his feet. There is no problem of any superiority or inferiority. One is awake, one is asleep. But the athlete, one can become awake any moment. Rather than answering Yaku-san, if Dogo has done something to express slapping the master, touching his feet, are just remaining silent, closing his eyes and sitting in a Buddha posture, would have given the answer. Language cannot answer such questions. You have to show your understanding, not your knowledge. You have to show your wisdom, not your information. You have to show your transformation. Dogo missed, utterly missed. Yaku-san commented, "You are a monk so full of chatter. You have not gone beyond the mind yet." Once, at the evening discourse, Yaku-san did not light the candle as usual. A monk came and stood by his side. You never know about the Zen master. You are absolutely incapable to predict their behavior. Because they live spontaneously. They don't have a certain ritual to repeat. Nobody knows what was the reason why he did not light the candle as usual. The assembly was completely in dark. One monk came and stood by his side. Yaku-san said, "I have a very special phrase. This is a special Zen expression. When the master says, 'I have a very special phrase,' he does not mean he has a phrase. He simply means he has something to confer. Not to convey, but to transfer." He said, I have a very special phrase. If a bull gives birth, I will tell it to you. Now bulls don't give birth. So he is making an absolute, absurd statement. If a bull gives birth, I will tell it to you. The monk must have been an enlightened one. The monk said the bull has already given birth. Long ago, and you just keep not revealing it. It is time you should reveal. What do you mean by the phrase? It is time you should convey. You should transfer it. You should unburden yourself. Because the bull has given the birth long time ago. Yakusan asked immediately for a light. He wanted to see the monk. He has given the right answer. Yakusan asked for a light. When the candle was brought in, the monk retreated and disappeared into the assembly of monks. There were thousands of monks. Later, Ungan told Sozan to other masters talking about old days with Yakusan. Later, Ungan told Sozan about this and Sozan said, the monk knew the truth. But he just did not want to make obeisance to the master. There is every possibility you will misunderstand it. You will think that Sozan is saying that the monk knew the truth, but he did not want to touch the feet of the master. You will think he was an egoist. No. A man who knows the truth cannot have the ego. They both cannot exist together. There is no coexistence between truth and ego. And what is the meaning? Why he disappeared? My understanding is he disappeared because he did not want even to be recognized, because that desire to be recognized is part of the ego. He did not even want to be grateful to the master. Not that he was not grateful. He was so grateful that to show it by touching the feet was very miserly. There was no way to show the gratitude to the master. And he did not want any recognition. He had simply disappeared in the crowd. Just as he had inside disappeared in the cosmos. He is no more. Who is going to touch the feet? In the darkness, it was perfectly okay because the master could not see him. But when the light was brought in, he simply disappeared. This anecdote has been misunderstood by the scholars very much. I have seen their commentaries. They all think it was because of his ego. But they don't understand. Its scholars cannot understand. They don't see that the monk knew the truth. How he can have the ego? You can have either the ego or the truth. Ego is your personality. The truth is your individuality. You have to drop the personality. You have to stand utterly naked before existence. You have to melt down like ice into the ocean of this great divineness all around. America has not produced any great mystic. It has not produced any great psychoanalyst. But one psychologist, William James, everything else is ordinary, but one thing he brought is phrase, authentic experience. The religious experience is an authentic experience. Just for this small phrase, this small statement, I consider him to be one of the greatest psychoanalysts that we have produced anywhere around the globe. He has touched exactly the right point. Religious experience is an authentic experience, a dewdrop is slipping from the lotus leaf into the ocean. In a way, disappearing into the ocean. In another way, the ocean disappearing in the dewdrop, both becoming one. The monk simply disappeared into the crowd because he did not want to be recognized. He did not want even to pay obeisance to the master, because that will also be in some way a hidden desire to be recognized by the master. But a man who has understood the truth needs no recognition. He becomes a nobody. In Buddha's language, he becomes anatta. He becomes a no-self. He is no more. Only the existence is. It is a beautiful anecdote for you to meditate, to contemplate on. Sampu wrote, "Child waiting earthbound, cloud is sparrow, higher and higher." It is a small haiku. It says, child waiting earthbound. A child in the mother's womb is waiting to come to the earth. First one has to get roots into the earth. Only then you can spread your branches into the sky like wings. Only unless you have roots, you cannot spread your wings into the sky. Deeper the roots, higher goes the tree, almost reaching to the sky. Only one painter in the West, Vincent van Gogh, a Dutch painter, has tremendous insight, almost an insight of a mystic, very close to be a Buddha. He always painted his trees surpassing the stars. His stars remained underneath the tree and the tree went beyond the stars. And whenever he was asked, "What are you doing?" This is simply insane. No tree can reach beyond the stars. The closest star is 4 light years away. The closest. And you have to understand 4 light years. Scientists have to find a new measurement, yards and feet and miles won't do. This is the measurement for the star. The distance is so vast. What is a light year? A light year is light travels in a single second 186,000 miles. In 1 second, 186,000 miles. Now multiply it by 60. That will be 1 minute. Multiply it again by 60. That will be 1 hour. Multiplied by 24, that will be 1 day. Multiplied by 30, that will be 1 month. Multiplied by 12, that will be 1 year. 1 light year. The nearest star is 4 light years. If we can ever, in our wildest dreams, think of a rocket moving at the same speed as light, which is impossible. Impossible because at the speed of light, everything becomes light. That very speed turns everything into light. So you cannot have a rocket moving with the speed of light, you and the rocket both will become light. But just to understand, if you move with the speed of light, you will take 4 years to reach to the closest star. And there are already counted 4 million stars in the world. And this is not the end. This is the end of our instrument. Beyond those 4 million stars is still there infinity. And we can never reach to the boundary line because there is no boundary line to existence. Van Gogh was asked again and again that, "Are you mad?" But he said, "I have been sitting by the side of the tree, listening where they are going. And I have always heard that the trees are our earth's ambition,
to reach to their stars. My paintings are not sexual, they are poetic. They are the ambitions of the earth to reach to their stars. He is the only man, a very rare man, who looked at stars not the way we look. He looked at stars as spirals. Nobody has ever looked at stars as spirals. People asked him, "What are you doing?" He said, "What can I do? Whenever I close my eyes, I see the stars as spirals." It took 100 years. Just now physicists have come to the point that stars are spirals. Van Gogh was right, although he has no instruments. Eyes cannot see. He was so much obsessed with the sun. He wanted to paint. One of the perfect sunsets. The whole day he will wait under the sun, watching and watching and watching. And then all psychedelic color on the horizon. And the sun setting. And he painted almost for 1 year, but rejected all those paintings because nothing was coming closer to the beauty and the ecstasy and the silence and the birds returning home and the sun setting. And those psychedelic colors on the clouds on the horizon, never repeated again. Always original. The day he finished his painting with satisfaction, he was only 33 years old. He wrote a letter to his brother that my work is done and I don't have unnecessarily to be a burden on the earth. And he committed suicide. He painted almost thousands of paintings, but not a single painting was ever sold because nobody could understand his paintings. They were so strange, but they were absolutely real to him. Senpu is saying, child waiting in the mother's womb, for what? Earthbound, wants to get to the earth, to get his roots deep into the earth. Because unless you have roots in the earth, you cannot rise in the sky. You cannot be a Siddhar of Lebanon, 400 feet high. Then you need 400 feet deep roots. A balance is needed. Otherwise the tree will fall. This is one of my basic and essential approaches. That unless you are deeply rooted in materialism, you cannot rise into spirituality. The East has committed one mistake. It has been trying to reach to the stars without going deeper into the earth. And it has been a complete failure. The West has committed another mistake. It goes on growing the roots into the earth, into matter. And it has forgotten completely about the star. Hence my continuous emphasis that every one of you has to be a Zorba the Buddha. Zorba is the roots in the earth, and the Buddha is a longing to fly into ultimate freedom, to reach to the space which is unbounded. Child waiting, earthbound, cloud, sparrow, higher and higher, and a bird, a cloud, sparrow, goes on higher and higher into the sky. Both need a great synthesis. Our world is suffering because we have not been able to create a synthesis between East and West, between earth and the sky, between spirit and the matter, between your inner and the outer. Unless this great synthesis is achieved, humanity has no hope. A question from Manisha. Our beloved Master, your masterliness last night was awe-inspiring. It seems ironical, but does the disciple only really comprehend the Master's compassion when he is enlightened and thus no longer so dependent on it? Manisha, here nobody is dependent on me. You want to be dependent, but I won't allow it. It is because of your desire to be dependent you have created organized religion. You have become enslaved by all kinds of churches, cults and creeds. Because of your desire to be dependent, it is a further fixation in the terms of psychoanalysis. Because the child is so dependent on the mother and the father. If it is a boy, he becomes fixed on the mother, and that is a great trouble. If it is a girl, she becomes fixed on the father. Every girl in her whole life will be trying to find a father figure in her husband, and that is impossible. Nothing is being repeated. You cannot find your father as a husband. Hence, every woman is frustrated. No husband seems to be right. Every man is disappointed because no woman is going to be your mother. Now it is a very strange problem. The husband is trying to find his mother in the wife. The wife is trying to find her father in the husband. There is constant struggle, fight. Marriage is hellfire. How people manage to live together
it is a miracle. Because they are miserable as a husband, as a wife, they have to find some consolation somewhere else. In the gods, in the priests. It is not without any reason that Christian priests are called fathers. Even Catholic priests. Do you see the contradiction? They are unmarried and you call them fathers. They are trying now to find mothers to become really fathers, but the Vatican is against. Why you call God the Father? And there are mother goddesses also. These are fixations of childhood. You were dependent, then how long you are going to be parasites on your parents? 25 years. By the time you become a PhD from the university, you are a parasite. And the father and mother want you to be independent. Now it is time. But in 25 years, they have taught only one thing, be dependent, without their awareness. Now you are thrown into the world. Your whole psychology demands somebody to be your savior, a Jesus. You are ready to become sheep. Some shepherd is needed. Somebody to console you that don't be worried. Just believe in me and I will save you. I will take care of you. Some God who is omnipotent. He has to be. Otherwise how he will take care of so many billions of people? He has to be all knowing, present everywhere, omnipotent, all powerful, omniscient, all knowing, omnipresent, everywhere available. This is our desire. And the priest certainly exploits humanity because of this dependence. The priest consoles you. Karl Marx was right when he said, the religion is opium of the people. The so-called organized religions are certainly opium of the people. I will not call religiousness to be opium of the people. That is a totally different phenomenon. No God, no father, no priest, no rabbi. You are standing on your own feet. Your trust is in existence itself. No mediator. Manisha, my whole effort is that you should not be dependent on me, whether you are enlightened or not. If you are not enlightened, it is needed even more. No dependence. Because a dependent person is spiritually a slave.
And a slave has no right to become enlightened. You have to declare your independence, your freedom, even while you are not enlightened. Because this freedom, this independence will pave the path towards enlightenment. Of course, after enlightenment, there is no need to be dependent. Because there is no need to be dependent, you can be grateful. You can have compassion. And you can understand the compassion of the Master. It is difficult in your darkness, in your unconsciousness, to understand compassion and love. But that should not be your concern at this moment. At this moment, your sole concern is meditation. Go deeper into meditation, and you will find compassion, and you will find understanding of compassion. And you will find freedom, and you will find that freedom does not mean ungratefulness, unthankfulness. There is no need to show it. Your heart will beat with it. Your heart will continuously ring a bell of great blissfulness, benediction, and of gratitude for the Master. But it is not dependent. No Master who is authentic will ask your surrender, your commitment. These are the frauds who ask your surrender, who ask your commitment, who ask that you have to be under my control, under my instructions. You cannot leave the fold. This is not a fold. This is purely a gathering of individuals. It is not a society, neither a club, nor a church. It is not an organization. I love to share, and you are thirsty, and I have enough water to share with you. Because I know the secret, the more I share, the more I have. So I am not a loser, and you will be gaining deeper and deeper insight into existence and its mystery. But there is no question of any dependence on me. I am just your friend. It is your love if you call me your master. You are not commanded to call me your master. You can call me your friend. You can even ask the question without addressing me. The address is not the point. You are related to me in deep love, without any conditions, either from your side or from my side. I have to explain to you, whenever you make somebody dependent on you, you also become dependent on that person. Have you ever thought about it? That dependence is a mutual phenomenon. The master of a slave is also a slave of the slave. The leader of the people is also a follower of the people. The leader is continuously looking where the masses are going. He jumps ahead. to remain the leader. He goes on saying what the masses want to listen. Whether that is harmful or poisonous does not matter. Whatever the masses want to listen, he goes on saying it. Never make anybody dependent on you. Your wife, your husband, your children. Because the more you make them dependent on you, you are becoming dependent on them. Allow freedom to your wife, to your husband, to your children. Help them to be independent, and that will help you to be independent of them. And if we can teach independence and freedom to people, all fictions in religion will disappear. I have heard one rabbi and one Christian bishop were very friendly. They used to go to the golf course together. They have decided for the coming Sunday. But the bishop said, there is one difficulty. If many more people come for confession, I will be late. I will do as quick as possible. But you wait just in front of the church. The rabbi was waiting and waiting and waiting, and it was getting late. Finally, he got out of his car and went from the back door into the church to the confessional booth where the bishop was listening to the confessions of people and giving them punishment. The rabbi said, we are going late and there is a long queue. It won't be ended by the evening. I suppose one thing, just let me see how the confession is being done. Just two cases you do. And then you go and get ready, and I will finish this whole lot within minutes. And the bishop said, that's great. So he spoke to one person, said that I have committed rape. There is a curtain and a small window, so the identity of the person is not known. Only the voice is heard. The bishop said, $10 in the charity box and 5 Hail Marys. The rabbi said, that's enough. You go and get ready. And he sat into the bishop's chair. Another man came and he said, I have again committed a rape. The rabbi said, $20 into the charity box and 5 Hail Marys. The man said, the rates have gone higher. Within seconds, I have heard just now, you have given the other person only $10 and 5 Hail Marys, and suddenly you are charging me $20? The rabbi said, don't be worried, my son. $10 are in advance. You can commit one rape more. No need to confess. I'm in a hurry. Just pass on. And he finished the whole queue within minutes. He did not hear what they were saying. He said, I already know. Rape, theft, murder, what else you can do? So just name the crime, don't describe, don't go in detail. I don't have much time. Just say murder. 10 Hail Marys and $30 in the charity box and get lost. The Christian started is very strange. Our bishop never behaved like this. But by the time the bishop came, he could not believe. The booth was empty. The rabbi said, this is a small business, but you are doing well. In the synagogue, we don't have such institutions. This is absolutely against economic progress. I will try to start confession in the synagogue. But all rabbis said, nonsense, that is Christian, that cannot be done here. So he went to meet the chief rabbi and he said that they are doing so much business and Jesus was a Jew. He was born a Jew, he lived a Jew, he died a Jew. He was never a Christian. He was our son. We should be the inheritor of all his business. The chief rabbi said, cool down. His assistant chief was also present. They said, we do business in a different way. Look at me. My synagogue is the most ultra-modern. Both the rabbi said, what do you mean? He said, I allow people to smoke cigarettes or drink bottles of wine or beer, whatever they prefer. Everything inside the synagogue becomes holy. So people are coming. The synagogue is packed. The assistant said, I have never told you, but I am doing better. I allow that they can bring their girlfriends also. Our boyfriend, as the case may be, and all these things are ordinary, beer and wine and cigarettes, that's okay. They can even make love, because that is what our basic teaching is, love. And not only your wife, but also your neighbor's wife, love. So there is so much crowd and people are queuing outside. So we have to run the synagogue in shifts. Inside synagogue, everything is holy. The third man who has come to find business, he said, I have understood. Now I am going to do something even better. They said, what you will do? He said, I am going to put a board before the synagogue that on every Jewish holiday, the synagogue will be closed. let people enjoy. That is the basic principle. Enjoyment. And for this enjoyment I am going to charge. I am giving them one holiday completely. No sermons, no sitting in the cold seat. Unnecessary trouble for people. So they have to pay, and the synagogue will be closed on all Jewish holidays. It will be open otherwise. But on Jewish holidays only Jews come. On other days, nobody comes. Religion has become a business. All religions. And it has become a business because you are searching dependence. Now giving $10 and saying 5 Hail Marys, you feel unburdened. Unburdened to commit another race. It is cheap. And that's why Pope says, don't communicate directly to God. It is a sin. Obviously, it is a sin because how the priest will live, how the Vatican bank will live, its turnover is perhaps the greatest than any other bank. $100 billion per year. And the whole money is heroin money. The Italian government has issued an arrest warrant for the bishop who was running the bank. They turned black money into white. It is the biggest mafia. But Vatican, although just 8 square miles, it is a sovereign country. And the Pope is not only the head of Catholic Church, he is also the head of the Vatican sovereign country. Just 8 square miles. Italian government cannot enter, so they were just waiting for that manager to come out. But he will not come out once he knew. And do you know what the Pope has done to him? Rather than delivering him to the Italian government, because he is committing the greatest crime, and the Pope goes on speaking against drugs, and his bank is dealing only in drugs, all the money that he is spending on his tour. When he went to Australia, he spent $8 million. Just before him, the Queen of England has gone, she spent only $2 million. From where this money is coming? He has, rather than giving it to the Italian government, made the bishop a cardinal, raised his post, because he is the source of money. It is not only about the Catholic Church, it is the situation of all religions. But why people give? They need consolation, they need somebody to look up to him, somebody who can promise them that they will be saved from hell and hellfire. Here in this place, you have to learn to be dependent only on you. Just search your own sources. I can help you to be free. Free from everybody, including me. Because I think freedom is the ultimate value. Now it is time for Sardar Gurdyal Singh. Sardar Gurdyal Singh has its special time. Because he is a special man. His speciality is, there are many new guests, so I want to tell him that he is the only man in the whole world who laughs before the joke is told. And these jokes have a certain spiritual purpose. We have been serious. Before going into meditation, you have to calm down, relax, laugh, forget all about religion. It is dark and stormy day at the Vatican. The bells are tolling ominously. As inside, on his deathbed, lies Pope the Polar, breathing his last. At the bedside, there is a crowd of bishops, cardinals, priests, and other homosexuals, mourning and chanting Cardinal Cat's ass is crying his eyes out as he is bent over the Pope's face. Ah, don't be upset. Guess Pope the Polar. Don't cry. The Vatican Council will surely find a great man to take my place. As a matter of fact, I am sure he will do much better than me. But Whimper's Cat's ass, that is just what they promised us last time. Don Quayle, the Vice President of America, gets called into George Bush's office one morning. "Don," says Bush, handing him a box of business cards. "Don, these are your personal vice presidential business cards. They help you to remember who you are." "Gee, thanks, Mr. Bush," says Quayle. "I shall always treasure them." "No, Don," says Bush, "you use them. These cards are to influence people and show them how important you are." "Gee, thanks, Mr. Bush," says Quayle. "I guess I really am important now." "Right then," says Bush. "Now I want you to get out there and help the American farmers. Go out and visit some farms, Don.
just show them your card, Dan, and they will be able to get things done. Take the bull by the horn, Dan. Ji, okay. Mr. Bush says, Quail, here I go. And he walks out. Sometime later, Dan Quail finds himself at old farmer Jack's place in Georgia. He drives into the farmyard to find old Jack puffing on his pipe and leaning up against the railing. The old farmer can recognize an idiot when he sees one. And he refuses to let Quail look around the farm. So Dan Quail reaches into his pocket and pulls out his business card. Jack inspects the card closely. What is this? He asks. Well, explains Quail, Mr. Bush said, just show them your card and then you will be able to get things done. Okay, says old Jack, shaking his head, if that is the way you want it. 10 minutes later, old Jack is still leaning against the railing, smoking his pipe, when he suddenly hears loud screams coming from the field. He looks around just in time to see Dan Quail running for his life across the grass. Right behind him, snorting furiously, comes Rambo, the big black bull. Hey, you idiot! What are you doing? Shouts old Jack. Just show him your card. Bishop balls off, has a beautiful parrot called Lucy, who knows all sorts of Catholic sermons and songs. However, Lucy does not really care for the Catholic religion. And secretly learned to say, down with the Polak Pope. One day, Lucy is sitting by the open window when she starts screaming in a loud voice, down with the Polak Pope, down with the Polak Pope. Before long, the Catholic Church Committee is told about this outrageous noise coming from the bishop's house. They immediately summon Bishop Balthasar to appear before them to explain himself. The scene is tense in the church courtroom with Bishop Balthasar and Lucy the parrot sharing the witness stand. Bishop Balthasar is testifying that it is Lucy who has been causing all the trouble. The prosecuting priest approaches Lucy and tries to get her to speak. Down with the Polak Pope, hisses the prosecutor, but Lucy sits silently. Cardinal Fitz, the judge, comes down from his high chair and approaches Lucy. He too tries to get her to speak. Down with Pope the Polak, he says, but Lucy just blinks and keeps quiet. The 12 priests and nuns in the jury leave their seats and approach the witnesses saying, down with the Pope the Polak. They shout in unison, but Lucy remains silent. Soon the whole Catholic courtroom is full of noise as everyone tries to get Lucy to say the offending words. Down with Pope the Polak! They shout, down with the Polak Pope! Suddenly Lucy flaps her wings and a deathly silence falls over the courtroom. The parrot looks this way and that, inspecting the Catholics closely. "Okay," says Lucy, holding up one wing, "then may God answer your prayer." Nivedana. Close your eyes and feel your body to be completely frozen. This is the right moment to look inward. Gather all your life energy, your total consciousness, and with an urgency, as if this is going to be your last moment of life. Only with such urgency you can rush towards your being, towards your very center. Faster and faster, as you come closer to your center, a great silence descends over you. Fountains of peace spring within you. Suddenly a great ecstasy possesses you. This is the moment you are the Buddha, the awakened one. At the very center of your being, the Buddha has been hiding since eternity. You have never looked inward. Otherwise, you have all the treasures of the world, you have all the existence can offer to you. The Buddha is nothing but a door into eternity. Into godliness, into the divine existence. The only quality the Buddha has to be remembered, it is witnessing. Just witness, the body is not you. Witness, the mind is not you. Witness, the astral, the other bodies, the subtle body, are not you.
These are all just layers upon you. Hidden behind all this layer is your real being. That being is pure witness, a water on the hill. Buddha knows no other quality. He consists only of pure witnessing. Witness all the experiences that will be happening at the center of your being. The serenity, the calmness, a very cool breeze passing through you, an unknown fragrance filling your being, a blessing that you have never known, a benediction that you can share with the whole world, and it will be inexhaustible. Witness this moment. You are the most fortunate people on the earth, because everybody is looking out and you are looking in. Everybody is looking at things, you are looking at godliness, your very subjectivity. Everybody is concerned about trivia, you are concerned with the essential core of existence. Collect as much as you can the flowers, the fragrance, but remain a witness. To make the witness even deeper, Nivedana, relax, let go, just be a witness. Slowly, slowly your body will start falling into deep rest. Your mind will be a far away echo, nothing to be concerned with. Silence deepens and you start melting, your separation from others disappears. The Buddha auditorium becomes an ocean of pure consciousness without any ripple. You are the whole existence, not part of it. Everybody is the whole existence. To me, to be one with the whole is the only way to be holy. Collect. Whatever experiencing is happening, you have to bring it with you. And you have also to persuade Buddha to come along with you. He is your very nature. Hence there is no problem why he should not come into your ordinary day-to-day activity, in your gesture, in your words, in your silences of the heart, in your love, chopping wood. He will be extending within you, carrying water from the well. He will be watching silently from inside. Persuade him, inch by inch we are bringing him closer and closer to your ordinary, simple existence. The day you disappear and only the Buddha remains will be the most blessed day of your life. Nivedana, come back, but come back as Buddhas, with grace, with silence, with great duty, and sit down just like the Buddha for a few moments, to remember where you have been, the source, its juice. It was your life's juice, the flowers of eternity, the fragrance of the beyond, and the Buddha has come, just he's behind you. Soon he will become your only reality. This I call straight to the point of enlightenment. Okay, Manisha?
Yes, Master.
Thank you.